Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. From Northwestern University, we're going to learn about how cacao, which is chocolate, could bring relief to walking pain for people with peripheral artery disease, and that's millions of people. This was published today by the American Heart Association's Journal of Circulation Research. We have about 14 more studies. Then we're going to play a clip from a TED Talk and a leading, highly respected pediatrician who says with absolute confidence that there is no connection whatsoever anywhere on autism and vaccines. So we'll hear what she has to say. Then, if time permits, we'll also hear from a psychiatrist, Kelly Brogan, about how psychiatric medications are actually causing mental illness. And during this time, we'll be opening up our lines for you to have a talkback segment. You can call in and share your points of view. But first, we always begin with the latest on health and healing. So what this study says is consuming cacao can improve walking performance if you have peripheral artery disease, and that's good. And so if you've had peripheral artery disease, or what is known as PAD, P-A-D, what it is simply a narrowing of the arteries that reduces blood flow from the heart to the legs. And about 8.5 million people over 40 are suffering from it. The most common symptoms are pain and tightness and cramping and weakness or other discomfort in your leg muscles while walking. So good to know. All right. 2 ounces of cacao, a healthy chocolate. I suggested 70% is the ideal. Higher than that, it's too bitter. And lower than that, there's generally sugar in it. So that would be the ideal way of getting it. Very easy, and it helps a lot of other things. From Barcelona Institute for Global Health comes a study, living in greener neighborhoods can postpone the natural onset of menopause. Why? Simple. Lower stress and better mental health. These are known benefits for green spaces, spending more time in nature. So living near trees, water, things that are green, can help lower your risk of obesity, improve attention capacity in children, and slower physical decline in old age. And now for the first time, a study led by the University of Bergen and Barcelona Institute for Global Health found that living in a greener neighborhood also is associated with the onset of menopause. You can push it back. That's good. This was published in Environmental International. From Loyola University Health Systems Department, a study explores hypnotherapy for gastrointestinal issues. And Loyola Medicine is among the first to conduct a clinical study using hypnotherapy to treat functional conditions like gastrointestinal disorders. That, by the way, affects upwards of around 35 million Americans. People affected with a functional condition like this, frequently stomach upset, stomach pain, burning, nausea, bloating, belching, and prolonged feeling of fullness. And medical testing does not reveal any abnormalities that explain these symptoms, and the condition is thought to be related to dysfunction of the nerves and muscles in the stomach. Well, recent scientific research indicates that this dysfunction is explained in part by the brain-gut axis, communication pathway between your gut and its nervous system and the brain. In conditions like functional disruption, you have disruption in the pathway causes the nerves and muscles to go awry, resulting in uncomfortable digestive symptoms. So, one of the best hypnotherapist, Dr. Mike Wellner, who passed, I think, 2 years ago. And also in New York, I still believe he's still practicing, Lord Glauberman. And Dr. Donald Mullen, a close friend of mine over at the Albert Ellis Center, that was a primary way he helped people. He put them into a hypnotic state. And of course, when you're in a hypnotic state, you don't think you're in a hypnotic state. You think, I'm not hypnotized. And yeah, you are. And that's where you can bypass your blocking mechanisms to get to the truth of something. So in any case, I saw these people help an awful lot of people with hypnotherapy. From University of Maryland comes a study published in the Journal of International Neurophysiological Society. If you want to improve your memory while staying fit, well, try exercising for at least an hour regularly. All right? 1 hour, 5 days a week, gets you in superb condition. 30 minutes will get you healthy and improve your memory. That's according to the study. So how does exercise affect the brain? Well, it's not that simple. But part of this is that aerobic exercise improves memory and brain function by promoting neurogenesis. Okay, so what is neurogenesis? Neuro, N-E-U-R-O, genesis, G-E-N-E-S-I-S, refers to the growth of new cells in the brain, which is facilitated by an increase in the production of brain-derived neurotrophic factors. So what exactly is a neurotrophic factor? Okay. The brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, is a brain protein involved in the growth and maturation and maintenance and survival of nerve cells. And besides being active at the synapses, where communications between nerve cells occur, the BNDF is also found in brain regions that control important physical activities like eating and drinking. It also influences learning and memory as it regulates the ability of synapses to adopt in response to experience. So, if you want to have a better memory, walk. Just get out and walk. All right? Power walk. Walk fast. So, that's how it works. Also, 10,000 steps a day. It's not a magical formula, but it works in preventing weight gain. This is from Brigham Young University. For years now, 10,000 steps a day has become the gold standard for people trying to improve their health. And recent research shows some benefits can come from even 7,500 steps. But if you're trying to prevent weight gain, a new Brigham Young University study suggests no number of steps alone will do the trick. Researchers from Brigham Young University's Exercise Science Department, along with colleagues from Nutrition, Dietetic, and Food Science Department, studied freshmen over the first 6 months of college, and they participated walking 10 to 12,000, even 15,000 steps a day, 6 days a week, for 24 weeks. But it was their caloric intake that also counted. The goal of the study was to evaluate if progressively exceeding the recommended step count of 10,000 steps per day would minimize weight and fat gain in college freshmen. In the end, it didn't matter. If the students walked more than 15,000 steps, they still gained weight. Students in the study gained, on average, 1.5 kilograms, and the kilograms approximately 2.2 pounds, so that's roughly 3.5 pounds. And that's because you've got to watch your caloric intake. Now, if you combine a plant-based diet that is low in calories and walking 10,000 steps a day, then you're going to lose weight. Also, from the University of Sheffield, which is in the United Kingdom, an article published in the Peer-Reviewed Journal of Geriatrics shows that more than half of older people don't consume enough protein to stay healthy. Hence, you start to see the wasting away their muscle, their posture changes, they don't have the grip strength, flexibility, the speed, endurance, because they're lacking protein. Now, you can get all the protein you need. Generally, it's around 46 grams per day for a woman and around somewhere around 55 grams, more or less for a man. That'll change depending upon your size and your activity. But if you were to have a good plant-based diet, you're going to get, in the morning, in just a smoothie, you can get 35 grams protein. At one good meal a day, you can get another 20 grams protein. So right there, you've got it. But people are not having the smoothies. People are not doing what they should do. So let us, wherever possible, if people are open and want to know that, share that they can get all their protein from a plant-based protein powder and then from plant-based proteins. See, a lot of people don't know how to read a label right. There's a package of, let's say, beans, and or even refined beans, which are good, and you look and it says that there are 3 servings. But then you look at the total grams of protein, it says 9. Now, is it 9 in the whole can, or is it 9 per serving? Those measurements are supposed to be per serving. So a lot of people are getting more protein who are vegan than what they actually need. And a lot of people think they're starving their body by going on a vegan diet because they're not getting the protein, because they've been conditioned to believe that only animal proteins are providing you with complete protein, and that is not true. How do I know? Because I'm the scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology who discovered that all plants have all 8 essential amino acids, all nuts, seeds, legumes, pulses, grains, have it all. And it took 12 years before a peer-reviewed scientific journal published the results of that study. And finally, I did a press conference. I'm curious if anyone in the audience was at that press conference. We held it at a Robert F. Kennedy Junior High School, or high school over on the east side, because it was the largest auditorium we could find. The press conference started at noon, went till 5 o'clock. We had a whole group of scientists there, including the ones from the Institute of Applied Biology who confirmed my work. And we released what we called the Egg Project. And in the Egg Project, which later became a huge best-selling book, I was told, though I never looked for myself, that it went to 12 printings. That's a lot of printings. And it showed 5,000 different combinations of food in normal serving size that you could consume to get more protein, complete protein, than you could if you ate any animal protein. How about that? So we completely just destroyed the concept, the myth that you have to have animal proteins, eggs, milk, you know, fish, fowl, veal, beef, pork. You don't. You don't have to have any of that to get all your protein. In fact, you're actually healthier if you don't do it that way. So that's just why we have to get through this myth. And I mean, this myth is strong. And by the way, for those of you who are not concerned about what's in your environment, your work environment, your home environment, you should be, because some plastic food and beverage containers still contain biphenyl A, BPA. That's according to the University of Texas. And that's not good, because those chemicals in the plastic, especially if you microwave, they can mimic the hormone estrogen. And that is really bad. This was published in the Journal of Proteome Research, and it shows that it can stay in your body for 3 generations. That's over 70, around 75 years. All the more reason to do your detoxification, to eat organic, to use glass and not plastic. All right, just be conscious of these things. That's the latest in health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to play this highly respected pediatrician, what she has to say. Her name is Wendy Chung. This is at a TED Talk, and we'll hear what you have to say about it. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid.
why? Why is a question that parents ask me all the time. Why did my child develop autism? As a pediatrician, as a geneticist, as a researcher, we try and address that question. But autism is not a single condition. It's actually a spectrum of disorders. A spectrum that ranges, for instance, from Justin, a 13-year-old boy who's not verbal, who can't speak, who communicates by using an iPad to touch pictures to communicate his thoughts and his concerns. A little boy who, when he gets upset, will start rocking, and eventually, when he's disturbed enough, will bang his head to the point that he can actually cut it open and require stitches. That same diagnosis of autism, though, also applies to Gabriel, another 13-year-old boy who has quite a different set of challenges. He's actually quite remarkably gifted in mathematics. He can multiply three numbers by three numbers in his head with ease. Yet when it comes to trying to have a conversation, he has great difficulty. He doesn't make eye contact. He has difficulty starting a conversation, feels awkward. And when he gets nervous, he actually shuts down. Yet both of these boys have the same diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. One of the things that concerns us is whether or not there really is an epidemic of autism. These days, 1 in 88 children will be diagnosed with autism. And the question is, why does this graph look this way? Has that number been increasing dramatically over time? Or is it because we have now started labeling individuals with autism, simply giving them the diagnosis when they were still present there before, yet simply didn't have that label? And in fact, in the late 1980s, the early 1990s, legislation was passed that actually provided individuals with autism with resources, with access to educational materials that would help them. With that increased awareness, more parents, more pediatricians, more educators learned to recognize the features of autism. As a result of that, more individuals were diagnosed and got access to the resources they needed. In addition, we've changed our definition over time. And so, in fact, we've widened the definition of autism, and that accounts for some of the increased prevalence that we see. The next question everyone wonders is, what caused autism? And a common misconception is that vaccines cause autism. But let me be very clear. Vaccines do not cause autism.
Brigida. All right, that's her opinion, and let's assume for a moment she's right. Then I would suggest that I begin by apologizing for all the thoughts I've had and the information I've shared, that you should have caveat emptor, consumer beware. Know what is going into your body, whether it's in the food or a vaccine or from the water. And I would also suggest that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. today apologize. And Dr. Mary Holland, professor of law at NYU, and now with Robert F. Kennedy's in his group, apologized, and all the other people. Because clearly, the tenacity of that comment and the power of persuasion of her being an expert means that there's only one truth, that's her truth. So let's move on, nothing more to see. Vaccines are clearly now, and we should all accept, safe and effective. We've all been wrong, yeah, and that's fine, not a problem. Well, hold on, just one itty-bitty, kind of insignificant thought I want to share with you. And that is, what would happen if those same people, those same parents, had read the vaccine insert made by the manufacturers, it's a matter of law, has to be done, before they put that into their child? So what would we see? Again, not that it's significant, and we shouldn't really be concerned. According to the authorities, the CDC, the FDA, they clearly know more than the rest of us. But I'm just curious. Influenza, just the influenza vaccine, just one vaccine, Guillain-Barré syndrome, stroke, myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, chronic inflammatory disseminated polyneuritis, there's your polio, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, optic neuritis, Bell's palsy, encephalopathy, encephalitis, bronchial neuritis, arthritis, transverse myelitis, and death. Yeah, death. But again, who are we? Who are we? We're not a TED. TED would allow us to talk and to share our points of view. Okay, well, that's, hey, so what? That's only a flu vaccine. No big deal. The big deals are the MMR vaccine, ProQuad, right? From Merck. Clearly, that's got a safe record, all good things. At least that's what we're told, right? Didn't the woman go on NBC and say, get your damn vaccines now? Okay. Well, I looked at the package insert. I see measles is the number one side effect if you get the measles vaccine. Oh, hold on. I thought, dumb me. What do I know? Like Columbo in the TV series. Is it possible that you don't have the measles, but if you get the measles vaccine, you get the measles because the vaccine? Yes, it's right there on the label. Atypical measles, vaccine strain varicella, varicella-like rash, herpes zoster, herpes simplex. Remember I told you a lot of people make the mistake of thinking the only way you get herpes is by sex? To the contrary, that's probably the least way you get herpes, because herpes you can get just from the MMR vaccine. By the way, that's not the only one, it's just one. You get all kinds of herpes, and you get the first four conditions in the adverse effects are four types of measles. Pneumonia and respiratory infections, no big deal, right? And then bronchitis, who cares? Cellulitis, subacute sclerosing, panencephalitis, aseptic meningitis, thrombocytopenia, aplastic anemia, that's anemia due to a bone's marrow's inability to produce platelets and red and white blood cells, a lymphadenitis, that's a type of inflammation of the lymph nodes, anaphylaxis, that can kill you. Necrotizing retinitis, so there you can go blind. Nerve deafness, okay. Who needs their hearing anyway? Optic and retrobulbar neuritis, that's inflammation of your optic nerve. Bell's palsy, well, you don't want to have a good picture of yourself with Bell's palsy taken because half your face is going to be distorted. Cerebrovascular accident. Is that like Terminate with Extreme Prejudice? Martin Sheen's job in Apocalypse Now? Doesn't sound bad, does it? Hey, what's so bad about Terminate with Extreme Prejudice? No different than saying, oh, yeah, cerebrovascular accident. No, that's a stroke. And people die of strokes. Acute disseminated encephalomyelitis. Well, hold on. My goodness, four of these could lead to brain disorders, including autism spectrum disorder, measles inclusion body encephalitis, transverse myelitis, encephalopathy, Guillain-Barré syndrome, afebrile seizures, convulsions, polyneuropathy, dysfunction of the numerous peripheral nerves of the body, Stevens-Johnson syndrome, Henoch-Schönlein purpura, acute hemorrhagic edema of infancy, arthritis, and, wow, there it is again, as if it's important, death. If it was that important, do you think any parent would say, yeah, hey, go for it, double down, it's only a child's life? Or would they say, hold on a second, you mean if I take this vaccine or give it to my child, death could be a side effect? Yeah, it's right on the I'm just reading the package insert. Not as professional, of course, as the person on TED Talk who just said it with great determination, doesn't cause any of this. What about the MMR R2 product? Surely that's newer, that's even better, safer. So the side effects, brain inflammation, encephalitis, and encephalopathy, chronic brain dysfunction, there's your autism. Wow. Oh, hold on. Weren't we all just told that there is no such thing associated with vaccines? And then I got another inflammation of the fat layer under the skin, the panniculitis, atypical measles, pancreatitis, inflammation of the pancreas, diabetes. So, wow, could diabetes 1 come from vaccines? No. No way. They wouldn't do that. No legitimate doctor would in any way set aside the notion in all of medicine and all of healing of the precautionary principle, first do no harm, by making sure that anything that could cause harm is not used. Thrombocytopenia, that's blood disorders, inflammation and bleeding in the small blood vessels, acute hemorrhagic edema and infancy, leukocytosis, and anaphylaxis, which is shock, and inflammation of the lung tissues, arthritis, joint pain, subacute sclerosing, and that's fatal progression of brain disorders because of the measles virus, but it's actually the measles vaccine that has the side effects. And widespread inflammation of the nerve protective covering that can lead to multiple sclerosis, transverse myelitis, which is an inflammation of the spinal cord, aseptic meningitis, nerve deafness, hearing loss from damage to the inner ear, retinitis, inflammation of the eyes, optic neuritis, and not again, come on, death? Wow. But what about the Gardasil vaccine? That's the one that Dr. Pan and all of them are so certain it can prevent cervical cancer 50 years later in someone who takes it, and yet its antibodies aren't strong a few years later, so clearly they just made a judgment call and they were wrong. But so what? It's like eating some tapioca pudding, right? The human papillomavirus vaccine. What's it say here? It says Gardasil 9. So when you take this, you can end up with nausea, fatigue, diarrhea, upper respiratory tract infection, upper abdominal pain, oropharyngeal pain, myalgia, asthmatic crisis, anaphylaxis. There's your shock, pulmonary embolus, idiopathic thrombocytopenia, lymphedema, autoimmune anemia, pancreatitis, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, transverse myelitis, wow, multiple sclerosis, central nervous system demyelinization, optic neuritis, acute cerebral ataxia, autoimmune hepatitis, okay, chronic fatigue syndrome, motor neuron disease, paralysis, seizures, deep vein thrombosis, and, wow, death. So every one of these vaccines can kill you. And then we've got the meningococcal vaccine, facial nerve palsy, seizures, intracranial hypertension, that can kill you, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, that can kill you, chronic inflammatory demyelination, that can kill you. Neuromyopathy, anaphylaxis, allergic reactions, myocarditis, that can kill you. Appendicitis, viral meningitis, that can kill you. Staphylococcal pneumonia, that can kill you. Fibromyalgia, juvenile idiopathic arthritis, psychiatric disorders, that can put you in a psychiatric home. Gliomas, that can kill you. Osteosarcomas, wow. That can kill you. Idiopathic thrombocytopenia and hyperthyroidism. What's not to like about this vaccine? So who's reading this anyhow? Nobody. How about your chemist? Nobody. Nurse? They can't read. And how about your medical doctor? They don't want to read. So who's that left to read the actual insert? No one. Should you even question this? No. We've had an expert tell us there's nothing here to fear. So stop worrying. It's all good, isn't it? But then, again, this is not important. and it certainly shouldn't assuage anyone from not getting their vaccine. But I just decided to look into the actual peer-reviewed scientific literature to see, for example, a couple vaccines. What does the actual peer-reviewed literature show? Have really quality studies been produced to show a connection between vaccines and autism? Yeah, vaccines and different types of brain illness? Yes. Has the government's own agency paid billions of dollars for vaccine injury? Yeah. And if they actually found 63 of these studies involve autism spectrum disorder or other neurological conditions? Yes. And are they our friends? They hate you. This is the Justice Department. These guys are no better than common criminals. They're there to protect the vaccine industry, not to help you and your child. You don't have a chance to appeal. You can't bring in all kinds of exculpatory evidence. Everything is stacked against you. In spite of that, they paid out almost $4.5 billion in settlements to people who were vaccine damaged, including autism. But why be bothered by truth when we have a TED Talk? So here's just a little bit. Again, it's of really no relevance. Influenza vaccine, that's your flu vaccine that, you know, you get, come in and get a free flu shot. And always they open up, they sit you down, they go over the package insert, they talk about how these figures about 36,000 people dying of flu each year are not true. It could be as low as 1,000 in a country of 333 million people. But they want to make sure that you're in enough fear that you go ahead and you get this. And they read you every single one of those package inserts. I'm guessing that's the case, don't they? Sure they do. Every nurse in every school tells every kid. In fact, they don't even want the kid to get permission from the parents. That's how much trust they have in the vaccine. So why don't you do the following? Why don't you read The Lancet Infectious Diseases, 2013, page 769, and the Journal of Clinical Neuroscience, December 15, 2008, page 15, and Internal Medicine, 2003, page 191, and, oh, hold on, I got a show to do, and I've got, oh, is it 165 studies that I found on Gardasil alone? Wow, the Canadian Medical Association Journal, Lupus Journal, Dermatology Journal, the Internal Medicine Journal, yeah, Neuroimmunology, Neuroinflammation Journal, yeah, I got that. Journal of Neuroimmunology and Psychiatry, got that too. Multiple Sclerosis Journal, got that. And I've got, wow, how many of these do I have? Just on the Gardasil, I've got over 100 journal articles, but what's the difference? The mRNA vaccine. So if we put all these peer-reviewed literatures together, all these journals that show the danger of vaccines, it might cause a physician, it might cause a doctor, a nurse, or maybe even it would cause a pharmacist to question the safety and efficacy of everything they're putting into an innocent child's body. But hey, we got a choice here. We can look at the actual scientific literature. We can listen to the parents, of which there are more than 4 million. Remember, believe her, but not if she's telling you anything was wrong with her children. Then you don't believe her. She's a nut job. I see. Well, the one thing I'm happy about, we're not a society of contradictions. So I'm going to take back my apology, and I'm going to ask Robert Kennedy and Mary Holland and all the others in the movement. I'm going to ask all the parents, Barbara Lou Fisher, all those who've had damaged children, let's hold the promise of vindication to those who say with absolute certainty, I did not have sex with that woman. No, that's a different person. He wasn't important at the time. He wasn't that powerful. He was just another guy, right? No. No, but boy, when people tell us with absolute certainty and conviction that they're right and the rest of us are wrong, maybe we should do our homework first. I'm Gary Knoll, and yes, we have written 53 articles. These are scholarly articles, real scholarship, where we did not start off with a bias. We looked at the information, and our articles came from the information. And yes, we've done 4 multi-award-winning documentaries, Autism Made in USA, Deadly Deception, Silent Epidemic, and Vaccine Nation. And yes, we have spent more than 15,000 hours doing our homework. So here's something I'd like to do. With all due respect to the person at the TED Talk, and I'm absolutely convinced that you're certain in your defending vaccine safety and efficacy, please come on this program for an open and civil debate just with me. All right? And you present your evidence in support of the safety of vaccines and how only now have we got new techniques to find them. Then I got a question just on that. If we're just now finding through new science, and I've yet to see that, but maybe you have it, that autism is increasing, then that meant that autism has been here all along. Then where are the millions upon millions of adults with autism spectrum disorder? I haven't seen any. Maybe you could just think on that before you come on the show. I'm Gary Knoll. We're here to challenge authority. We do our homework. We're not paid to do it. We choose to. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. If you'd like to call in and share your points of view, we'd be happy to hear from you. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear what you have to say, your thoughts. Unedited, unscripted, honest, and to the point. All right? And while we have people about to call in, while you're calling in, I'm going to play a short clip. This is only 3 minutes long. This is from a board-certified psychiatrist, Dr. Kelly Brogan, B-R-O-G-A-N, talking about psychiatric medications actually causing mental illness. This should be interesting. Alec, our engineer in New York, please play now Dr. Kelly Brogan's three-minute clip for the audience.
They're driving the very epidemics that they, you know, are claiming to treat, right? Including data that shows that for every, you know, 23 patients, this is Yale data, 23 patients treated with an antidepressant, one bipolar patient is born, you know? So we are creating and generating epidemics of mental illness that wouldn't exist without the treatments that we are offering. And this is called iatrogenesis. You know, this is called doctor-driven harm. And I have witnessed in my practice many patients who developed symptoms during treatment, but particularly during discontinuation, that they never had before medication treatment. And these symptoms can include everything from suicidality to intractable depression. You know, there are patients who have never struggled with depression, who are treated with antidepressants for, you know, insomnia, for example, and who end up 5 weeks later committing suicide. So this is something that we have to reckon with. And essentially, the challenges of a medication taper often leave patients trapped and, you know, in a kind of a set of clinical handcuffs because they are symptomatic on medication and then they cannot come off it. Of course, it's my passionate belief that if we address, you know, holistic principles for healing, that we actually improve a patient's ability to come off a medication. But I certainly, you know, could not promise or guarantee that it's always a possibility. And this is why I believe most passionately in patients who are thinking about initiating these medications, that they must be informed of the full picture of what it is that we know about their habit-forming potential and the very unpredictable nature of their side effects.
Okay, we'll be doing more on this topic. We have Dr. Peter Bragan and others coming on because I'm putting up a bio, hopefully later today, and in that bio you will see me in front of the American Psychiatric Association's annual meeting with about, I'm guessing around 2,000 people from this audience, crossing the Javits Center where we were protesting and very politely going over and asked the psychiatrist questions. Do you believe there's such a thing as bipolar disorder? Oh, absolutely. Prove it. What do you mean? Prove that it exists. Prove that there's a brain chemical imbalance. You say there's a brain chemical imbalance. Yes. Do you have any evidence? No. Now, when you go through 10 people from all over the world who have come to this conference, and every single one will tell you, I believe in the diagnosis, but there's no way we can validate it or verify it. None, no x-ray, no blood chemistry, nothing. Then I would ask, so if you have a child that is quiet by nature, as many children are, or children who are rambunctious by nature, you're now calling that a pathology? Yes. Well, then that means that every single behavior you're going to pathologize. So now you have math defiance disorder, parental defiance disorder, authority defiance disorder, health obsessive disorder, because a person wants to be really healthy. That makes them a mental case, and therefore they must suffer from brain chemical imbalances, and you're going to give them a diagnosis and drug. Does any of this sound real to you? They just smile. So I'm finishing up a major documentary as we speak. It'll come after the current one, which is in final color correction today. And this one is called Manufacturing Madness. Before we go further, let's say hello to Daryl from New York City. Daryl, your turn. You're on the air.
Dr. Null, I really appreciate all the work you're doing. Last night on the PBS NewsHour, Hari Srinivasa did a piece on the worldwide measles epidemic. And what I noticed, especially after having listened to you, is A, they failed to differentiate between wild measles and vaccine shed measles. And in American Samoa, they've got like 250 children dead from the quote-unquote latest epidemic. And what I was wondering is, what does one offer people who then become concerned about the vaccines? How does one talk about the immune system as a defense mechanism?
Very, very insightful questions, Daryl. Thank you. First, it is not our position to accept and sponsor or condemn vaccines. It is our responsibility as concerned public health officials and citizens to do our homework, to be, remember what I coined the phrase 2-3 years ago, intentionally aware. So by intentional awareness, you're intentionally seeking information that is not provided by the consensus media, the consensus scientific community. Therefore, you have to go beyond them and their spokespersons and look for the truth beyond that, because what you're getting from them is propaganda. That's why when we kept reading about, and even on the CDC's own site, 36 to 30,000 people dying of the flu each year, when we looked at the, actually went through all their detailed analysis, it was right there in black and white. Anywhere from, I think the low year was around 700 cases to the highest was around 1,300 cases died of actual flu, because these other cases, there was no actual blood workup done to determine do they have the actual flu or something else. And then we found that the measles vaccine itself was causing the measles. The flu vaccine was causing the flu, and they were shedding anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks nonstop. Therefore, a person that's vaccinated could go to school and start spreading their shedded mucus on desks and on doorknobs, etc., and now other students are susceptible. So what you do, you explain how the science is political, it's been politicized, it's been weaponized against people. And if you want to prevent any illness, some illnesses are not actual illnesses, they're infections, like the measles is an infection. Chickenpox is an infection, the mumps are infection. We all got it getting up, all of us, in the baby boomer generation, we got these. In fact, I remember that my mother would say, well, Dorothy is Dorothy's child has got a chicken pox, so all the other parents are taking their kids over for sleepover, so they'll all get chicken pox, and a week later it's gone and they're immune for life. Now we have like helicopter parents that micromanage every second of a child's life, so there's no chance to be a child protecting them from everything in the world so they one day feel threatened by something that someone may say in a humor routine at a college campus and therefore want that person banned because their whole life feels threatened by something that a comedian might say or a teacher might say or another student might say. This is how far down the rabbit hole of mental dysfunction we have gone. That's not a mental disorder. That's a social and interpersonal familial response to dysfunctional, dystopian ways of looking at life. So what do? You simply say, what is necessary for a healthy immune system? Vitamin D, vitamin A, both deficient in Africa. Echinacea, astragalus, pau d'arco, vitamin C. In fact, today, one of the most promising things they're doing to help people with the coronavirus in China is they're starting with 25,000 Chinese, all infected, to give them vitamin C intravenous. How about that? Did you hear about that, Daryl?
No, I didn't.
And you won't. But it's there. It's just that nobody wants to know there's a natural, non-toxic method of approaching a condition. There always has to be a drug because the people behind the scenes, the AstroTurf groups, the people who are doing all the virtue shaming, if you don't get in line and don't act like a sheep, is they have to control the outcome. And they want to be rewarded for their effort, not for results. Because if we rewarded people, the medical community as a whole, accepting those that do the magnificent work of saving lives in emergency medicine, medicine would be 88% gone because they don't get good results in chronic care. But in the banking community, the same way. In the economic or economist community, the same way. Or the major industries, the military-industrial complex, and our State Department, our peacemakers are all warmongers. If we rewarded them on the results of creating peace, those people wouldn't exist in our society as far as policymakers. So you see, we've reversed the sense of the spectrum of insight. We've taken people who convince us by the authority of their persona or their position of deferment in a hierarchical order, that if you're a professor or senior professor or chairman of department, you must be the smartest person if you're the chairman. None of this is true, of course, in the real world. If you go to Harvard, you're smarter than the person who goes to SUNY at New Paltz. Not true. You can have a teacher just as good in any state school, and you can have a student just as smart in any state school. That this is what happens when we begin to red carpet social distinction. Now, I just made that up just now. Write that down somewhere. That's a good concept, because it means that we now have a society of red carpet everything, don't we, Daryl?
Yes, we do.
That if you're an actor going down the red carpet, you're more important and more bankable and therefore more desirable, and the agents want you, the production companies want you, the executives at network television want you because you're on the red carpet. If you walk down the side of the carpet and went in without it, you're no longer significant. So we're red carpeting everything that can be commodified in the United States. That's how we determine where we put our energy. That's where we determine where we put our money. What we back. We back that in power, even if it's known to be wrong. We're going into Libya, so says Barack Obama, and so says Hillary Clinton, and Victoria Nuland, and all the other people at the State Department who are part of that Washington consensus because they're all neocons, and we're going to bring peace. We did, didn't we? And democracy, absolutely. And freedom, wow, that worked. In the most progressive way. Except everything is just the opposite. Gaddafi had the most progressive Arab country in the world. More freedom for everyone. So think about that. Now, I thank you very much, Daryl. Daryl, we're going to take a break for a moment. We're going to take a music break and come right back. Please, everyone, stay with us.
Your home. done lost your woman and everything you own. Law of average plainly states that chances go around. But if you want to know the truth about it, I'll tell you what's pulling you down. Yeah, you got bad love. Yes, sir. Bad love.
Wait, Dara, one final thing is if anyone going to Africa or any other country that requires a new look at how we can help the children's immune system to prevent these diseases or to lessen their impact in a negative way, I'll be happy to provide a protocol. I'm going down to Puerto Rico with a group. I've been invited down to help them. I'm going to go in about 2 months. In fact, just after my anti-aging study, I'm going in for about 3 weeks, and I'll be helping all over the country, creating a sustainable food program, sustaining a water program, and so that no matter what hurricane damage occurs in the future, I've already done a whole creation of how they can have systems that can be sustained even in the presence of damaging effects of the hurricane and have food supplies and nutrients. So we can do the same all over the world if we choose to. Thank you, Dara. I appreciate that call. Right now on the phone we have Dr. Roy Spicer. And I've invited Roy on today because we ran out of the little water filtration units. I travel everywhere with my water filtration unit. And we're out at the moment of the ionic air filters, so don't call nor that. But we just got in today, 85 of the water units. And when people think about what's in a water system, almost every water system that I've read about in the United States is polluted with a variety of toxicants. You can't always see them. The water isn't turgid, meaning it isn't discolored, so you can say, oh, that's brown water. Oh, that's, look at that yucky yellow in there. No, completely clear-looking water can hold hundreds of contaminants, viruses, bacteria, parasites. And we're not told this. If we were told the truth about how antiquated our water purification systems are, we would be appalled. And one of the problems is that once you're consuming water, you have to appreciate that a minimum of 60% of your body is water and higher. So shouldn't we want only the best, cleanest, healthiest water in our body? So what we have now is the latest development. This is the newest of the new and the best of the best. It's a small little unit. You can put it in your pocket. You can travel anywhere in the world with it. And when you want water, even going into a restaurant, I remember all five of my friends that went to Brazil, they all got, and we were drinking juices, but the juice filtration system, I said, take a look at that. It was out on the street, and they had all these wonderful fruits. I said, I'll bet this filtration system hasn't been cleaned. And, of course, you ask anyone, and they go, yeah. Well, it was no. So I decided to pass on the juice at that stall. That night, everybody's in the hospital. Everybody's sick. Now, fortunately, one of our friends was the head of a hospital down there and was able to help them. But they were sick with amoebic dysentery for about 5 days. That happens all the time. And so what I do now is when I go into a restaurant, I pour water into my filtration unit, pour it into a glass, no one knows it. Brush my teeth when I'm traveling, shampooing and then rinsing off. I just pour this up, 22 ounces, rinse off my hair, because it's filtering instantly. Out bike riding, because I might do a 50-mile bike ride, stop, fill it in, and I'm good to go. So there's nothing like this. And the other stuff in out there doesn't hold up. But Roy, tell people, because I asked you to look at all the science behind this portable, tiny little water filter system. They can carry it with them, take it to work. I would not. You don't know who's touched that water cooler. You don't know how polluted that water might be. You don't know if it's even tap water that's been put through there. And a lot of this filtered tap water is polluted. So always use this. Roy Spicer, tell us, and Roy has a PhD in microbiology, but also has a background in infectious disease. Tell us about the newest Gary Knoll mini water filtration system.
Well, this is the latest generation of portable filtration, which is remarkably efficient at removing a wide range of contaminants. I'm looking at the laboratory tests that they did on the filter. It's remarkable in respect to, for example, volatile organic chemicals, which, as you mentioned, is in all the municipal water. I look at water reports every day. You'll see industrial chemicals. You have chlorine and chloramine byproducts and a whole range of chemical contaminants. They tested about 30 different chemicals, including toluene, pesticides like atrazine, solvents, a whole range of chemicals, and they reduced these chemicals, eliminated them by 99.9%. So that's pretty remarkable when you can take a whole range of industrial chemicals that are fairly common in the U.S. water supply and remove them on a small portable filter. In addition, the heavy metals, which are the most common, like lead, mercury, aluminum, cadmium, chromium, copper, the laboratory tests show that they got greater than 95% reduction. So that's, again, a very high percentage for a small filtration unit. And on top of that, as you mentioned, there's potential for parasites in the water, very common in surface water in the United States. For example, Cryptosporidium, which is a common parasite in many municipal treatments, the filter reduced Cryptosporidium 99.993%, that's almost 100%, and Giardia 99.993%. Plus E. coli. Now, you don't commonly see E. coli, but sometimes there are outbreaks if you have an emergency, like a hurricane or disasters. So in a post-disaster situation, you could use this filter to get potable water. And it's life-saving because you don't want to be drinking water that's contaminated with pathogens. So overall, this has a remarkable efficiency of removing a wide range of contaminants. They've tested it according to NSF standards, and it's a highly efficient unit. Plus, it's cost-effective. You don't have to worry about questionable bottled water. 60% of the bottled water is contaminated. So you have something with you. It can take anywhere. Use it on a daily basis. Use it at home. But you're covered anywhere you go to have clean water.
So that's it. It's a very easy to use. It's instantaneous. You don't have to wait around for an hour. It outproduces any other one that I'm aware of on the market. And you can travel with it. You can take it to work each day in your pocket. That's how good this is. 22 ounces. And it gets rid of everything that we just mentioned, everything Roy just mentioned. Now, we've been out of them. It takes time to get them. So we have 85 as of today. I'm going to give you the number to call. So when you call this number and order one, and it's not expensive. I mean, you know, we've made units that cost $400. This is very inexpensive, $49 or something like that. They'll tell you when you call. I'm not in the office in New York and haven't been for 4 months, so I'm a little out of the loop on that. Call 877-627-5065. Again, to get your absolutely unique, completely necessary water filtration system. And if you know anyone who lives in a country that is not getting clean water, get them one and give it to them. I intend to take a bunch of these down to Puerto Rico and give them as a gift to the people in the country. Call 877-627-5065. We have a lot of people from Haiti listening. And boy, Haiti's in trouble and has been for a long time. So you can help the people in Haiti because the water's polluted water is one of the worst things down there. And this works. Everyone should have this for an emergency because you never know when you're going to hit an emergency. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the latest Gary Null water filter. It's a small one. You can put it in your pocket. Take it anywhere and should. You should always have this on you. And don't trust the water coming out of a tap. Okay? Thank you, Roy. And we have Luann Panessi on the line right now. Hi, Luann. Is Luann there? Yes? No? Okay. Oh, okay. Well, she's not there. So we'll talk to her, whatever she wants to talk about, on another day. So that's it, everyone, for today. I want to thank you all for listening. And you can go to prn.fm and download 2 of 16 to come video bios, because now I'm going to show people the details and the truth about my own background so they can see that's the truth. What's on Wikipedia is not. And these will represent the true work I've done in all the fields that they seem to completely dismiss entirely. And so now you'll have the truth in front of you, at least the first two today, my PBS history and my documentary history. All right, there you are, everyone. And then we'll keep adding to it next week and the week after. And don't forget to go to PRN and look at the articles on Wikipedia. And we're asking you to download the articles. And then there's a letter there to send to your legislator asking for hearings on Wikipedia. And I know there's bipartisan support now to no longer protect the major web people like Google and Facebook and Wikipedia from libel lawsuits. All of us believe in freedom of speech, or should. But in freedom of speech, if you choose to abuse your freedom of speech and to libel someone, you should be held accountable in a court of law. They're not held accountable. Hence, they can lie and say anything they want with impunity. It's time now that we interceded and said, no, take away that law. Just that law. You know, that doesn't change the whole act or law. It's just that provision of it to appeal that or to change it so they can be held accountable. Therefore, they might value telling the truth. And again, go to prn.fm for all this information. Again, order the water filter. I only have 85. 877-627-5065. I was just told over the internet we got 14 left. 877-627-5065. Have a nice day, everyone.